on the road again. I'm Jeff Dantzler, he's Dave Johnston, and we are cruising up Interstate 75 in this brand new MX I-6 competition, Toronto Reds, the color. We may or may not have hit triple digits, cannot confirm anything. And we are right now again passing the Valdosta Clyattville exit, leaving Gainesville, Florida. Got a great win over the Gators today, 6-1, and that has certainly boosted and bolstered the old NCAA tournament resume. This team has been so much fun. Lost a heartbreaker on Friday night, and Florida won big on Saturday, but a great win today. The Dogs will be at Tech on Tuesday. We'll be rolling over to the Flats in this sweet ride that has all the gadgets that Q would lend to 007. And then the Ole Miss Rebels coming in Thursday through Saturday. And Josh Brooks announced last week, full capacity. Can't wait for that. But DJ, a great win for the Bulldogs today. We got out to that early lead, and Florida had chance after chance, but we were just able to hold them at bay, and we were all smiles heading home.
Yeah, I think this will do a lot for the program too, as far as, like you said, bolstering the resume. But if we had lost it and gotten swept, I don't know how I know there's going to be a lot of fans that are going to come no matter what, but I think this will really get everybody charged up for this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday series we got coming up against a very good Ole Miss team.
And no doubt, you're exactly right. It's interesting too, Georgia being in Florida, the women's tennis team today, again, as we tape on Sunday, got a great win over Virginia down in Orlando. The men down in Orlando playing North Carolina Monday, and men's golf cranking up in the Tallahassee regional, where Florida State, I believe, is the one and we're the two.
Yes.
So Bulldogs in the Sunshine State.
And the women's golf team last week rolling through their regional. I guess, is the men the same? Do they have top five, top six?
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
And this is the most nervy one. I know Coach Hacks always talked about that. There have been many a great team that just have that one little bad stretch and you don't even make it to the main draw of the NCAAs. But it's been a great spring, and with everything that happened last year, just so excited to be back at it again and have all the games and have all the competition going. It's been so much fun, and we had a great trip down to Gainesville. And one of the things I wanted to bring up too, we got to spend some time with a couple of our players' parents. Now, we knew one of the parents beforehand, but just grabbed some dinner with them just down at the hotel. And we've become friends with many of our players and many of our players' parents through the years, but a little bit different this year because we couldn't travel with the team until 2 weeks ago out to Arkansas. And both of these parents, their kids got in and did a great job on Sunday, and you know, it just refreshes the memory. We're seeing it from our perspective too, and we're living and dying with it. And my gosh, the parents, oh, you know they're feeling it with every pitch just thrown or every time you swing the bat. Holy cow.
Yeah, and certainly excited for the boys today. Like you said, we live and kind of die with it, and just being a parent is just a completely different thing, even with Coach Strickland and his son's high school team and being a parent there and just how crazy that is. He lives and dies on every play that Kale makes, and he sees both sides. He's the coach of the players and the parents of the players at the same time, or a parent of the players at the same time. But yeah, it's certainly very interesting, and we feel it too. But great win today. That makes everybody feel better. In fact, Coach said on the post-game show, hot dogs taste better when you're heading back to home. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting too when we were down to tape the pregame show Saturday, Coach Strickland's son, Kale, his high school team was playing. And so Scott was following the game tracker there to see how the game was going. And I asked him, I said, well, now having your son, who's a very good player, and a guy, I hope we're not getting any NCAA trouble talking about an underclassman recruitable, but I'll probably.
I didn't know, so I said it anyway.
He'll be a Bulldog, so yeah. Anyway. But and I said, has that changed you? Has it made you a better coach? He said, well, I don't really know about that, but he said what he's done. He goes, trust me, I don't say anything. And the coach does a great job, but, you know, he said, I'm just a fan. I'm just a parent as I'm watching there. But I wonder, too, deep down, when you got a kid, when you get old, I don't want to say necessarily that you get any softer, but maybe you do start to see things from a different perspective. And I mean, that's a good example for a head coach, because when you're talking about the college level, and any coach will tell you, you're recruiting these players. You know, you want to help them become better people, to grow through their life, to get their degree, and, of course, to come win for your school, in this case, Georgia. But then at the same time, you've got this relationship that you've developed with the parents, with their families, and the great coaches understand when you're making a decision, it has a huge effect on these kids' lives, you know, and especially when you're young. We're going to bring player A in to come pitch. Oh, boy, if he has a good game, he's all smiles and his family's all smiles.
Yep.
If he has a bad game, well, it's all frowns, and it's all frowns for the family there. So it just has such a great effect, especially in a place like Georgia, which casts DJ – this enormous shadow over the state, and as we know, just from everybody tweeting in around the country and around the world, they're Georgia fans out there.
Yeah, absolutely love it, and it keeps us in touch with everybody too, and that makes me feel good. I know it makes you feel good also, just to know that folks are listening, just to know that even if people can't go to the games, if they can't get a ticket, they are certainly still very invested in all of this, and that's great to know. Obviously, football is number one, but we see so much interest in all the other sports, especially in the spring, because you've got a bunch of different people, and one guy might like men's tennis the most, another guy might like baseball the most, and then someone else might like women's tennis the most. So it's not like the fall with football season where everybody is all in on one sport. But in the spring, everybody's still all in, but it may be broken up a little bit into different sports.
You know, I think that's a great call. I'd like to know, maybe we could do a little unofficial survey there of get what we would call everybody's favorite secondary sport. And then if football's king daddy there, is it baseball? Like, is it one of the tennises? Is it swimming? Is it basketball? Whatever it may be. And, of course, our fans are pulling for Georgia and everything, but naturally you're going to have your favorites. And, you know, with baseball, we've said it too, going back to the run we had with those four World Series trips from 01 to 08, when baseball's winning big, the popularity of the program is just enormous. And I think we can certainly feel it with this team. And, you know, everybody missed out on what happened last year. But with the heart and the guts and the spunk.
The spunk. Hey, you got spunk. Well, thank you. I hate spunk.
This has been a favorite team to follow. And we've talked about it with the coaches. When you look at our numbers and when you look at the injuries we've had, primarily to the pitching staff, it makes no sense that we have put ourselves in position to get to a regional. We should be fighting to get one of those 12 or 14 spots to Birmingham. We got a chance to go to the NCAA tournament. The numbers don't add up, but this team, they just find a way.
Yeah, and they did it again today.
Yeah.
I mean, it was crazy. Although the win today felt a little bit like the beginning of the Thursday Vandy game when Collins hit the three-run homer. Today it was Blaylock that hit the three-run homer, and that gave Georgia the lead. Then at the end of the first, when Florida didn't score, and luckily Ben Anderson made a terrific catch on Young, all of a sudden we've had our first lead of the weekend after the end of an inning, and we led from start to finish today. And look, Florida had plenty of chances. They had plenty of base runners. They left a lot on, but the Dogs pitchers, I know Cannon made several big pitches to get out of jams. Bring in Caldwell, he gets a big strikeout. Bring in Pearson, and he hasn't pitched very much over the last month. He gets a big out. Everybody contributed today. Because I was thinking, who was the player of the game? And I know Blaylock hit the three-run homer, but this was one of those, to me, where there wasn't that one player of the game. It was like this was a total team win today.
Well, it definitely took all hands on deck, and you're talking about six pitchers combining to give up just one run to a tremendous Florida team that's got a great offense. They do everything well, so I agree. I think this was one of those we could have just given it to everyone. We have our Primerica player of the game, and DJ was down interviewing Coach Strickland. I gave it to Blaylock and Cannon, but it could have been any one of a number of guys. I do want to tip the cap, too, to Ben Harris, who closed out the game. Wasn't a safe situation, but he has been just amazing this season.
Sometimes there are situations that aren't technically a save, but they still are a save. That was what today was. Today was a save.
There's another golf course there. I think that's the third one we've passed.
Well, we're still kind of in Valdosta. We've just kind of gone through the main.
Yeah.
Main area.
There's John Lastinger sinking a birdie putt. Attaboy, John. I wanted to ask you this. We talked about on the way down, very rare to see hitchhikers these days.
Yeah.
Okay. More rare. Hitchhikers or payphones?
Well, since we did see that hitchhiker on Thursday, I would have to say payphones are more rare, because I don't know the last time I saw one.
And I know the last time we saw a hitchhiker.
Thursday.
So yes. There you go.
So at least in the last 4 days, payphones more rare. I don't know. I mean, are they still out there?
I don't know.
You know who does have them? The Masters.
Well, because you can't take your phone.
Take your phone in, so they do supply payphones. And you can call anywhere.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Did you used to have, like, you had the number, like you had the card with the number you would call to then make a long distance call, and you had the certain amount of minutes?
Yeah.
And I can remember back when people, at some point there'll be no long distance calls. I'm thinking, wait, what? What? How's that
how can
even
that
possible?
Be? Well, there aren't now.
Yeah, people tell me, the internet. Oh, you'll be able to get it without being connected. I was like, there's no way. You've got to have a wire to get to the internet. And speaking of, we saw a phenomenal, now I've seen it on a koozie. Was it on a hat where you saw it where it says, I don't need the internet. My wife knows everything.
yeah. And I'm sure the wives love those.
Where we stopped off at a gas station to fill up in North Florida. We might have been around Live Oak or Lake City. They had the Front Porch Cafe in there, which actually looked pretty good. But we gotta get this MXI6 competition rolling north back home. But I thought that was a good one. And, you know, if you've ever getting a good koozie or a mesh back hat, those are really good. But, yeah, I don't need the internet. My wife knows everything. Every step. So, Carol, Emily, hey, guess what you guys are getting for Christmas? Ho, ho, ho.
That's right. No internet. No internet at all. Yeah, that was an interesting place. That's for sure. But, yeah, the weekend went and here's the thing, too. If you're told before the weekend, hey, by the way, you're only going to win one of the three, the Sunday one's the one to win.
100%.
Yes.
It's on the road.
Yes.
You want to come home in a good mood.
Exactly.
And that game Friday, they definitely, in the way these series set up, there's some lasting effects, particularly into the next game. So Friday, I mean, we just got our hearts ripped out. And then we had a Saturday night game, which is rare, though we've had it 2 weeks in a row. So that we got to sit around and stew on that all day Saturday. Oh, God, Tate's ball was fouled by an inch and a half. If it's fair, we probably win. And you're just driving yourself crazy. But then we got beat pretty bad Saturday. I mean, Florida just dominated the game. But it was a quick turnaround. I mean, high noon. So you play Saturday night, then high noon on Sunday. So I think it was good, too, to have that early first pitch just to go ahead and get that bad taste out of our mouth.
So we were the last game yesterday. In the first of six today. So, yeah, I'm glad to be getting on out of there and getting back to Athens. It's kind of weird how that worked out, but I'm like you. I didn't have a problem with it. And the game that we lost on Friday was just a punch in the gut. Last night, even Coach Strickland even said in the postgame show today, he was like, yeah, we just hadn't had many like that. You know, it was about the seventh inning, and you could just pretty much tell we weren't going to win the game. But those are easier to flush.
Yeah, they
just
are.
Get them out of if we had lost like that on Friday and then lost a heartbreaker last night, I don't know how today would have gone.
I know. It's
it would have been totally different potentially.
Because it hit us – you think about the Auburn was Thursday through Saturday. We win Thursday, we lose, what was that, 14 innings Friday night?
And then they come out
at noon
and they get a 7-0 lead.
I mean, I'm convinced if we pull that game out Friday night, maybe we still lose Saturday. I don't think we'd have been down 7-0
exactly.
in the third, though.
Exactly.
Hey, that's hard. And that carryover's tough.
And we've had several games this year where we were down big and came back and at least got the tying run to the plate, made it interesting. And last night was one of the few times, maybe only a couple of times this year, where that didn't happen. And certainly you got to give the Gators credit as well.
As Coach McGill always said, their boys are on scholarship.
Their boys are on scholarship too. So, yeah, it's not going to always work out that way. But that was the case last night. That was a little bit different than what we'd seen. I even asked Coach in the postgame show today. I go, I know the season's not over, but, you know, the personality of this team is just gritty, you know, just hard to put away. And I know a term that I'm not going to say it on here, but some of my buddies might be listening would know that we sometimes say on the golf course about a shot that we make.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a good shot, but it ends up okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how I feel about this team, is that what do they do, like, great or well? I don't know. I mean, I have to just kind of think about that for a minute. I think what they do great or well is that they do most things okay. I mean, there's obviously certain parts of the team, or you can look at the stats and that kind of thing and say, well, they don't do this well, they don't do that well. But the thing that, to me, that they do well is that you don't put them away, and they can play up or down to anybody. That can be good and that can be bad. But if you get in a regional and you're playing the number one team in their place, I don't think that's as huge an advantage against this Georgia team as it might be against some other teams.
Well, I think it'd be pretty easy to say these guys dialed up and got two wins at Vandy when the Doors are ranked number one, got a win at Arkansas when
Diesel.
The Razorbacks are number one. Tip of the cap, season that we are passing the Cecil, Georgia exit.
Diesel!
On I-75. Now, I was thinking about this too. Dave and I both love golf. So, next weekend, it's a Thursday through Saturday series. It's that way across the league. So this is just hitting me now, too, that this is the second. I'm not counting the COVID stuff last year. The PGA being in May, which I don't like because I like tradition. It's been in August forever. Just leave it there. And it just kind of hit me like, well, we will have a Sunday off to watch the end of a major. It will be at Kiawah Island. They've so monkeyed up the schedule now. I mean, it's just crazy what they've done with it. So they're going to go from, what, Quail Hollow in North Carolina to DFW to
Charleston,
Kiawah. Yeah, and then back to DFW. I mean, it is just, oh, my gosh. They've just fouled it up, in my opinion. So, yeah, the PGA Championship will be this coming week and down at Kiawah Island. And
so Morikawa is the defending champ.
Right.
But who's the defending champ of the
Koepka,
May?
Oh,
yeah,
Koepka
from
May.
19.
And that was that at Wing? Not at Wing. Was it Bethpage, maybe? I think it was in New York and made the first in May of 19. But
yeah.
it still throws me off that we've got a – you know, we got another major coming up now. You know, so with the Masters, you had those 6 weeks or so to recover from that. Then you had a couple of weeks build up to the U.S. Open. They're just zipping right into it. So I think Georgia, we're going to have a lot of Bulldog contenders there. Right now, I guess the way the guys are playing, would you say Harris English and Keith Mitchell might have the best shots to contend? I mean, we all know golf.
Yeah,
who knows?
I know.
I know.
Trying to pick a golf winner
is the hardest
you know,
sport to predict.
A guy that's interesting, a Georgia guy, is Russell Henley, because he lives in the area.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually been playing better golf. Yeah, he's crawled back up into the top 50 in the world. He may have slipped back a little bit, but you always wonder about him.
And Harmon's from Savannah.
So this is something that,
I mean, Kiz is from Aiken and Georgia.
Kiz likes courses like that. So, yeah, I don't know. This past summer, so me and my buddies would go on a golf trip every year, and this past summer we went to Kiawah. And that was a lot of fun, and we played the Ocean Course. I'd never played it before. And even though I'm not that good, it's still fun to play some of these, you know, once in your life.
Sure.
Play these kind of courses just so you can kind of see what it's like.
And can you beat your chest? I've played there before. Yeah. Let me tell you.
I go play these courses so when people, when I'm at a party and people bring up something, I can say, well, when I played there, this is what we did.
I stuffed it in 4 feet for a nice 2x4.
I had a 6 net 5 on one hole. No, but the thing I was going to bring up is, so like when we got there, and this was in August of last year, so it was pretty warm, but the wind blows so much that they told us, you know, on the practice putting green, make sure you practice your putting into the wind and with the wind behind you.
Wow.
Which I don't remember having been told that anywhere else we've been before, but they said it's a big enough deal that just make sure you roll some putts in each direction so you can kind of get a feel of what it's like. And then the front nine isn't really out on the ocean part, but when you get to the back nine, it definitely is a big factor. And of course, Kiowa got famous because of the Ryder Cup in 1991 that went right down to the wire, and the Americans had a lead and could put the Europeans away, and Bernhard Langer missed a putt on 18 that would have tied it, and they would have retained cup, I think. So it was the war by the shore, and it was a famous Ryder Cup, and it was kind of Kiowa's coming out party. And it's been a host of majors since then, and we saw Rory McIlroy.
Boy, he won big there. In 2012.
Yeah, he did.
God, that was 9 years ago.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So, I was going to ask you, since Jordan Spieth has been playing better, and the PGA is the one major he hasn't won, could this be the week? And I don't know how he did this weekend, but I know he was right there in the hunt.
I think he's certainly got a chance. I don't know if he can score enough, and of course the conditions. The thing too with golf, a lot of times you'll see it decided on the first 2 days. Say, well, how's that possible? When everybody's tight down the stretch, if you get the early Thursday, late Friday tee time or vice versa, and the weather hits you or the weather doesn't hit you, mm-hmm. that could make those two or three shots difference that on Sunday you might forget about those. So there's so much luck that comes into play with it. I do think with Jordan, he's not wearing near the burden that Rory is for the Masters, though.
Yeah, I agree.
It's because Rory had that Masters getaway in 2011. I think, obviously, for us growing up and being Georgia, and you and Spartanburg and both being Georgia Bulldogs, it's the major it'd definitely be the one I'd most want to win. And for most players, they would say the Masters. International might say British first, Masters second. And it's the one that's at the same spot, the Champions Dinner, all the traditions. And the PGA is number four on the list. But, you know, I think Spieth will have a chance to win it at some point. But, you know, Rory, the more and more you go, the longer you go, just the old saying that the monkey on the back just gets bigger and bigger.
And two, the Masters is also, it's the first major, so you've gone like 9 months without a major championship, and then everyone starts looking ahead to the Masters and they're thinking, well, is this the year Rory's going to do it? And that puts a little extra pressure on him too, because after the Masters, you don't have as much buildup to the PGA championship, and then after the PGA, you don't have as much buildup to the U.S. Open, and then from the U.S. Open to the next month, it's the Masters that has the most buildup.
Well, and especially we get extra tingly just being Georgians.
Yeah.
But, you know, you get around Christmas, the first time you see that first Masters commercial come up.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, and when the West Coast, swing starts, and we're obviously talking, I love the West Coast swing. It's the start of the season, all these beautiful courses. But every time Cuts Benedict does a golf show with us on our local station, we mentioned who's the early favorite for the Masters? All right, if you had to pick right now, is there anything you're seeing? So, yeah, I agree, and it is just such an enormous buildup for it. But I guess at some point we'll get used to the PGA being in May. But I do think some of the time in sports, it's like, all right, we're going to think about doing it in May. You're like, okay, well, let's just think about this. And then it's like, boom, it's done the next year.
Yeah.
or maybe say, well, we're going to try it for a couple of years and see how people like it. But it just seems there's this immediacy to make these permanent changes. And it's hard to put the toothpaste back in the tube if you don't like
something. Oh, yeah. Once you do it, it's probably done.
It's hard to go back.
And there's always those unintended consequences of things. You just don't know. Now, I get it from Goff's point of view is that they just felt like they were getting beat up by the NFL and by football.
But that's them force-feeding the FedEx Cup in there.
Yeah.
And the players aren't going to complain.
No, they like it.
Playing for, what, $10 million?
Yeah, yeah. Why would they want to stop that?
Yeah, it's like, no, whatever it takes. Money.
But moving the PGA to May definitely jams up the schedule.
It does.
And that's the thing.
It definitely does.
And that's why you got the, like you said, the wonky trip to Dallas, then to Charleston, then back to Dallas next week for the Colonial. So, yeah, I mean, it's what it is, though. I don't think it's going back the other direction.
No, at least, or again, if they do move it, it would certainly take some doing. But it is so much fun. I know we talk about this a lot. We've just got so many Bulldogs out on tour that contend. I mean, week after week, there's a list. I mean, I know there's a great Twitter site called Dogs on Tour, which keeps us up to date with everything. And man, it seems like we've got a guy in the top 10 every week. Sometimes we have two or three. Of course, we've had a bunch of those guys that have won as well. But it's just awesome to see. And I'm confident, too, DJ, that one of our guys, of course, Bubba's won the two Masters in 2012 and 2014. I'm confident that one of our guys is going to break through and win a major here soon.
Bubba lost the PGA in a playoff.
Ooh, 2010 to Martin Keimer.
Man, and that close.
And that was a DJ in the fairway bunker or not, and Rory missed a putt to get in the playoff. That was at Whistling Straits, and that was oof. That was a tough one right there. And that's a thing too. I think for any great athlete, you know, you see some guys you lose a heartbreaker like that. And, you know, for Bubba, I mean, I think he probably missed clubs when he got into that waste area in the playoff, but. You know, for some guys, that knocks you out. And for other guys, you learn from it and come back. You say, well, I'm just not going to make that mistake again. I admire the players who can do the latter because I know just as a fan, I sit there every day. And I mean every day, I think about these heartbreaking Georgia football losses through the years.
Yeah.
You know, back in the 80s, and you just think, what if? But for the great ones, they have this – remarkable ability just to move on and look forward. As a fan, I do not have that ability. and as what Coach Julie always said, the highs are never as high as the lows are low.
So a guy like Keimer, kind of interesting. So he's won a PGA Championship, and right. He's won a U.S. Open, and he won at Pinehurst. He's also won a Players Championship.
Yeah.
So is he a Hall of Famer?
Gotta be.
He's won two majors and a Players Championship?
Gotta be. And his U.S. What do you want? Because Eric Compton and Fowler finished T2. I think he won by like 8 shots.
Yeah, he putted everything.
Yeah.
Around the greens there at Pinehurst. It was very smart.
If you're talking about winning two different majors, the Players Championship, and if you want to go with the four biggest tournaments that are played on American soil, he's won three of them.
But after that, you don't really know, or you can't really think of too much of what he's done.
No, it's crazy, and that's why, I mean, just winning a major is so hard to do. And you know, you could get in a good debate: who's the best player to win one and only one major? You know, is it Davis Loves and Fred Couples, Tom Kite?
Yeah,
you know, guys recently, somebody like Jason Day, if you want to include active players out there. It's very, very difficult to do. So when you get somebody who's done it twice, that's a Hall of Famer in my book.
So if you count the longer win in the Masters, PGA, and a U.S. Open for Keimer, so the Germans are looking for a British.
A British, yeah.
And you know, last year, well, I think one of the great sports stories of the year was when Sofia Popov came out of nowhere and won the women's British. They didn't play a men's British, but they did play a women's British. She was ranked in the hundreds, and she played for Josh Brewer at USC. And I know he was really, really, really excited about that. So between one of his former players winning a major and now what the Georgia women's golf team did in the regional last week, it's been a pretty good 12 months.
Now, it certainly has. That's just another thing with Georgia. Not only are so many of our teams in contention for championships every year, but just when you look at the alumni that we have, and we talked about golf, but obviously we've got so many guys in the NFL, and we're on this incredible run of having at least one player in the Super Bowl.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's remarkable. And hey, I wanted to mention, too, in the big leagues, you know, Kyle Farmer has been terrific. And just the seasons that Alex Wood and Jared Walsh are having. I mean, last time I looked at the numbers, you know, Walsh was hitting 347, had a bunch of home runs. Alex off to a 4-0 start for the Giants. And, you know, Kyle's been one of those guys that he's so valuable. He can literally play every position. So I'm just so happy for those guys. And I do feel like with some of the guys we see, Hancock and Losey and Kristofak and Wilcox and Shepherd and Bradley and Shunk, that we're going to have some more guys in the big leagues here in the next 2 to 3 years.
I wonder if Kyle would be one of those guys that you could see like 20 years from now managing somebody.
I could see that. You know, he was such a great player at Georgia, playing shortstop, has played second, played third, can catch. And a lot of times with those managers, and that's what a lot of catchers through the years have made good managers, you know what you're doing and you know what everybody else on the field is supposed to be.
You're as close to being the conductor of the orchestra as you can be when you're the catcher.
I like how you said that. I mean, and I think that the great players and the great leaders that coach on the field, I think back, I believe it was a Mississippi State game in 2017 when we won 31-3. And that was just a play. We're lining up, and we had a 3 or 4-man front, whatever it was. And Roquan Smith, who was our best player on defense, and was a coach on the field. You know, Kirby will tell you he's one of the smartest players he ever coached, one of the most talented he ever coached. You combine those together, that's pretty good combo.
Pretty good.
But he, I just remember sitting there, and one of our defensive linemen was say, lined up head on with the left tackle. And Roquan just went up and kind of patted him on his left hip, and he slid over more to the gap, or more so off the right shoulder pad of the right guard. And we wind up hitting him for a no gainer, or, you know, loss of one, whatever it was. But just the fact that he went up, and he literally moved him over a foot, you know, half a gap. Let's be like, oh, he
was that 3 technique?
Was that a 5 technique there into the B gap?
And, yeah, that's one of your pet peeves.
Oh, God, I'm going to sound smart. He was a 5 technique. But just the fact that he did that, and I don't even, Roquan might have even made the tackle on the play, but to me, that's a guy who is seeing what our 11 are doing and what their 11 are doing.
Sure.
And, you know, for baseball, obviously, I love what you just said, the conductor. We need to write that down to work that into some broadcasts.
You know, I always think about this. I never really say it, but, like, when you see the catcher come up, step up and step over the plate and roll through the signs for his infield, when there's runners on base, it always looks to me like the conductor telling, you know, the orchestra what – you know, what's going on, doing the directing there. And that's what I think of with a catcher. Like you said, a lot of the great managers of all time were catchers.
Yeah. Well,
and there's certainly a reason for that.
Joe Torre certainly comes to mind there. But
yeah.
So we'll start calling Fernando Gonzalez the maestro.
The maestro.
The maestro.
I love Gonzo, though.
You know, the thing, too, with the catcher, he's the only player who's looking at the pitcher front ways. Everybody else has got a different
it's
angle.
True.
Yeah, so you're naturally looking at things the other way. But you know, we've all seen it through the years of football, basketball, baseball, when you do have that coach on the field. In basketball, obviously, it's the point guard a lot, because you've got to know what everybody else is doing, what the play is there. And those great players who are the coaches on the field are so much fun to watch.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And like you, another thing too, you mentioned is weird about baseball is that, and I hadn't even thought about that, that the catcher's the only position player facing the pitcher, but the defense puts the ball in play, and that adds a different element to that game as well.
Yeah, the baseball is the only sport where the defense has the ball.
And does cricket count?
American sport where the defense has the ball.
Yeah. I don't know how to play cricket.
I know they're bowlers and the games go really long, but that is one thing we say in baseball, you can. If you've got the lead and you're at the plate, you can exhale. I mean, I don't care if it's the national championship game, game 7 of the World Series, you cannot lose the lead. You can't throw a pick 6. The other team's not going to get a steal and a layup. When you're at the plate with the lead, you're not going to lose it.
Yes.
And that is something wonderfully unique to baseball.
You know that if you're hitting in the bottom of an inning and you have the lead, you will have the lead at the end of that inning.
That's exactly right. I was thinking, you know, hard, that just reminded me, hard times, Daddy.
Hard times, Daddy.
So, of course, some of the hardest things to do, if you're, say, down a run going into the top of the ninth inning, trying to tie the game up. Now, we talked about this a lot. I think in tennis, serving at 5-6 to get into the breaker, that's tough. Like,
yep.
That's like being down 8 in football. We got to get the TD and the 2-pointer just to tie.
Just to tie. That's right.
Yeah, that's tough.
Is that it? Let's see. So as far as sports go, that's a good one. Serving 5-6 in a set. Which, what else would rank up there with that?
And I do want to go on the great John Isner. You know how much I love John. So the marathon match, he wins 70-68. McHugh did that, what is that, 63 times, 62
yeah,
times,
yeah,
whatever.
That's true. That's one of the greatest accomplishments in sports.
I know. He was serving basically at 5-6 over 60 times to get in there.
Jeez.
No, that really is amazing. But, yeah, I don't know.
I was going to say, that's kind of a hard question to answer. I was going to say, what are other things that are similar in other sports? Here's what I thought of. It's not the same thing, but, like, maybe things that we won't see again that are hard to do. Like, the Bills not just going to 4 straight Super Bowls, but losing 4 straight Super Bowls to 3 different teams. It wasn't like they just ran into the same team every single year.
And that was the thing. And that's a great point, too, because it took the Lakers a long time through the 60s. They were in the finals a lot. But they were losing to the Celtics.
Every time, yeah.
Every time. And, you know, then, of course, they finally won it, and they won a bunch. Bunch. But you had to lose to those different teams. So, to me, that's one of the most incredible accomplishments in the history of professional football, going to 4 straight Super Bowls.
Yeah.
And it gets lost some. So the only other team to do it, I guess, what, the Dolphins went to 3 in a row. They went to 6, 7, and 8. And I think that's the only other team that's done it.
It just shows you how hard it is. I guess the Chiefs will have a chance to do it this year. But it's kind of funny, like, after they won the first one, this is going to be the beginning of a bunch. And then all of a sudden, you get to the Super Bowl again and you lose, and then you don't know what's going to happen.
Well, and it's another example, too. Their offensive line just got beaten up. And,
yep.
and they, I think they had 2 injuries and a COVID player on their offensive front. And the other thing, too, when you're in the playoffs in any sport, that's extra games. And just say in football, that's an extra 3 games that Kansas City played the year before. Tampa was not in the playoffs a year before, so that's 3 fewer games. They were, in theory, getting healed up more for that next year. Yeah, so it's hard to do it. You start tacking on all those games. I know it's one thing that started clicking for me, like when the Lakers had their run back in the 80s and they went to the finals, I guess, 9 times in 12 years from 80 through 91. Just you throw in all the playoff games that Magic Johnson played. I mean, that's another 2 seasons, basically.
That is another 2 seasons. And, you know, the thing that kind of drives me crazy a little bit, though, about the NBA now, and I don't follow it enough to be the guy that should be out criticizing the NBA, but when you're talking about playing all these games, they didn't have load management back in the day when Magic was playing. That did not exist.
No, they did not. And that's one, you know, I can remember any time Michael Jordan played, I would stop what I was doing. I'm like, well, I'm going to watch. He might do something I'll never play again. And I was going through some old VHS tapes. Like,
A what?
Throwing them all away. Yeah, it's like it's a payphone, right? It's a hitchhiker.
Yeah.
And I looked at one. I had one from, I don't know, January of, say, 1988. It was just a Bulls-Lakers regular season game. And I said, well, this is Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I'm going to take this game, you know, and James Worthy. And so you just do stuff like that. But yeah, the load management. And always, I know what Joe DiMaggio said when somebody asked him why he went so hard all the time, every game, he said, well, some kid or some fan might be in the stands watching me who's never seen me play before, and I don't want to disappoint them.
It's a good call.
Yes, it is.
And being on the – if they're on the road, you don't have – that's the other thing I think is kind of crushing. I know would have – that I would have hated was when I was a kid, if I was going to see the Hawks or if I were going to see somebody and then that team's superstar best player didn't play that night because of load management, I'd have been crushed.
Yeah, and in fact, that did happen to one of Emily's friends. Took their son to a Hawks, and I guess he played for Cleveland then, to see LeBron, and he didn't play. But that was that. Yeah, that's the thing too. Like if you know when you were a kid, if you went to a Hawks game and you wanted to see Dr. J, who was my favorite player, or Bird or Magic or Moses Malone, they were going to play unless they were hurt.
Yeah, exactly. One time it did happen to me when I was a kid was we were going to see the Braves, and the paper said Phil Niekro was going to start.
Mm.
So we get there, I'm all excited. Get to see Nuxie pitch, me and my dad. Well, either the paper was wrong or he was a scratch or something. I don't know what.
Oof.
And Buddy Solomon ended up pitching. So gone from Phil Niekro to Buddy Solomon. Now, here's the funny thing about that particular game. So I was a kid, so I wouldn't have been paying attention to some of the nuances that were going on. But Gene Tenace, T-E-N-A-C-E, mm-hmm. hits a home run for the Padres. And I may be wrong on this, but I feel like I remember this. He rounds third, and instead of heading home, he heads to the mound to go after Solomon, who I think had been like yelling at him while he was rounding the bases. So obviously there was something going on. And obviously this was a long time ago, and I've just fabricated this story in my head. But I know there was some kind of a skirmish or a dust up after Tennis hit the home run. And I remember it as him rounding third instead of going home. He just went to the mound. And I think that's hilarious now. It's just like he probably, I don't know, did they give him the home run? You know, did he didn't touch the plate, I don't think. What would happen if that happened now? What would the ruling be?
You got to touch home to score. So I guess you give him a triple and then he's out. I don't know. So, I mean, nobody would want to give up a home run, but I guess Gene Tenace,
he didn't care, I guess.
I know he had a great World Series. So he might have even been a World Series MVP, but I guess at that point, there's some stuff coming out of that truck.
Stuff coming out of the truck, ugh.
We're just going to go ahead and Pasadena on that one.
Yes.
And, that's an awesome memory, though. Buddy Solomon. I've never heard of Buddy Solomon.
I think he went by either Eddie Solomon or Buddy Solomon, or both. I'll have to look him up while we're talking here. And I think he's passed away now. But, yeah, that was a memory of mine as a kid not getting to see Phil Niekro. And nothing against Buddy Solomon, but
you
didn't want to see him.
And I think for Braves fans, too, and I used to go over to more games back in the 90s. I was younger and used to like the allure of the big city, some to go over every now and then. You think how spoiled you were for that stretch there of Maddox, Glavine, and Smoltz. And by the way, they had some terrific others. Steve Avery was great, you know, and he got hurt. And Pete Smith was good, and they get Kevin Millwood, Denny Nagel. But you had a 60% chance you were going to see a future Hall of Famer, all-time great, starting on the mound.
Oh, absolutely.
For your team, if you're a Brave.
Oh, I know. And that's the thing. You love that kind of stuff. By the way, this is weird. I just looked up Buddy Solomon. His name was Eddie Solomon. They called it Buddy Solomon.
Okay.
He was born in Perry and died in Macon.
Wow.
So we're almost in that area or close to it, but that's kind of weird that we're talking about him.
We're about to be seeing us some Buckies.
Yes, we are. Speaking of. By the way, so Buddy Solomon pitched for several teams. He was in the big leagues from 73 to 82. So he was obviously a good player as a pitcher. But he passed away in 86. So I got to see what happened here.
See, this is where the internet gets you on these
days. Oh, he was in a car accident making.
You know,
I hate that.
You know what crushes me is the IMDb. It doesn't matter. I'll be watching a Columbo. And who is that guy? Oh, yeah, he was in a Perry Mason also. And it's the B actors, not even character actors. It's those B-listers that play the bit roles.
So that, you know what made me send you that photo this morning of Three's Company?
Oh, beauty.
I'd never seen that one before. And it was Jack Tripper.
Right.
Also known as John Ritter.
Yeah, you had Chrissy.
You had the whole cast. You had Chrissy and Janet. You had the Ropers and the great Don Knotts.
Mr. Furley.
Yes. And they looked like they were like maybe an awards show or something.
John Ritter was having a good time.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. But what, where I saw that photo was, is like, I was flipping the channels this morning in the room before we went down and left, and there was a Ropers on.
Oh, and, my gosh.
And I don't even know what it was on, what channel it was on, but it was the first one. It was the like the pilot episode of them moving out of that apartment complex and going somewhere else. And it's funny, too, because some of the writing was a little probably off color that you wouldn't have today. You know, the way Mr. Roper always referenced John Ritter, Jack Tripper. But Jeffrey Tambor was in it.
Oh, he's a beaut.
Oh,
he's
phenomenal.
That's a guy who's been in a lot of stuff.
Oh, I know. But of course, you know, Arrested Development.
Yeah.
And also, you know, he was the dad in The Hangover.
Yeah, so he probably got on a heater. Yeah. But, you know, I was watching one of those behind the scenes TV, True Hollywood Stories. Hey, Norman Fell, who played Mr. Roper, said, like, I don't know if we want to do this. Like, we've got a good thing going now.
Yeah.
And apparently he was still like, oh, no, no, no. If you go, if it doesn't work, we'll bring you back.
Yeah, well, no, it doesn't work that
the
way.
The next thing you know, here comes my man Ralph Furley.
Yep.
Who would throw in some sweet leadership.
Yep.
But I love Three's Company. And as I think we kind of put this debate to bed. If you could go to any fictitious bar in history.
The Regal Beagle.
No brainer. I mean, with all due respect to Cheers, I mean.
Well, what are, that's a good. So what are some famous bars from TV shows?
Well, first,
Cheers, obviously.
Well, let's just go with some hangouts now. The Sopranos hung out at Sal's and Bada Bing. Okay.
Yep.
The Seinfeld, they just hung out at the was it Monk's? Was that the name of the place?
Yeah, they would just go drink coffee and eat.
Right, right.
Yeah.
They weren't big drinkers. But,
yeah.
I mean, the Regal Beagle hanging out with Jack Tripper, either Mr. Roper or Ralph Furley, and the greatest sidekick this side of Chewbacca, Larry Dallas.
Larry Dallas, wingman.
What a beauty.
Yeah.
All-time great wingman there. No doubt the Regal Beagle's where I would want to go.
I'm trying to think. All right, so what would have been some of the other good watering holes of famous TV shows?
Archie Bunker had a place that he hung out at.
Archie Bunker's place. Or no, that was the spinoff.
That was the spinoff, yeah.
Yeah, where are some other places, though, that it is kind of interesting now that we're sitting here talking about it, and I'm sure there's some others out there. I'm just having trouble thinking of them.
The bad show with the good song, that they hung out at like a coffee shop.
That was a coffee shop. Yeah, that wasn't even a bar.
They weren't, listen, the Regal Beagle, my man Larry Dallas, my man Jack Tripper, they were going to throw back some brewskis.
Yeah.
And mingle with the lovely women of Santa Monica, California.
Yeah. Well, that's not what Mr. Roper thought.
But he would do the little thing with his hand.
Yeah.
Love me some Stanley Roper.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
One of the greatest landlords of all time. Mr. Roper.
Yeah, he was a beauty.
So, but I would do my former landlord, Dr. Dean Fershine.
Yes. But my allergist.
Oh, yeah. It's a great commercial for it.
Yes.
So I'd write him a check. So I'd leave a note like, hey, Dean, I left your check in the mailbox there, and he sent me back once just a great gif of Mr. Roper turning and smiling.
That's awesome.
That's fantastic.
Nice.
The great Stanley Roper.
So how about this? Now, it's not a bar, but the great Isaac from the Love Boat, very famous bartender.
Well, that's a mobile bar.
Mm-hmm.
Mobile on the ocean.
Yeah.
The Love Boat.
Of course, Coach and Woody from Cheers.
Yes, yes.
You mentioned Larry Dallas from the Regal Beagle.
No, the Isaac, he would give in the introduction, he would give the point.
I love that show.
Love Boat was great. I ran into one a couple of years ago. And again, it's one they'd have a hard time doing now, which, you know, but it was great. It had Joe Namath and Fred Willard were the guest stars. So it was one of those deals like, all right, I'm going to go get my workout in from, say, 10 till 11. I need to come back and write for a little bit. The TV was on. I was getting ready to walk out of the door. And I'm like, I love to hear the Love Boat theme. So it takes me back when I was a kid, early 80s. Hershey was playing. Good times. You know, it's not like school was hard. Didn't have any women problems back then. You know, it's all good.
Oh, yeah.
It was all good. So I love hearing the theme. And then when it comes up with the guest stars, it was Joe Namath and Fred Willard. I said, well, my workout's about to be put off. There's no way I'm missing this.
How, that would be stupid on your part. You got to stay there and watch that.
The old shows. I came across
– what about NYPD Blue? They had a watering hole in it. I don't know if it really had a name or I'm just not remembering it.
Yeah, they would go to just, I guess what they would say, quote-unquote, a cop-friendly bar.
Cop-friendly with Sipowicz needed to do shots. He needed to get drunk.
That's my favorite cop show ever.
Mine too.
And part of it, they did a great job of blending the cases, and you had the human interest. And in the first season, it was more of, there was the one running theme with Janice LaKelsey and the mob guy. But then they moved on from that a little bit. Yeah, but the character arc of Andy Sipowicz. It's great. I mean, that show brought me to tears several times.
Even going from Hill Street Blues to NYPD Blue.
That was a great show, too.
Yeah.
Hill Street Blues. Great theme song, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that could be for our next show, because I know we're running tight on time, but...
You know what just popped into my head?
What's that?
Barney Miller.
Oh, there... Boom. Whatever reason, shows from the 70s and early 80s just had so many memorable songs.
Now that I think about it, we need to get Matthew Kaminsky to drop some Barney Miller at some point.
It's that bass line?
I know. Yeah, he can do it. The great Matthew Kaminsky.
He is the best. Yeah, but some of the just great... And I mean, even the greatest American hero, believe it or not.
George isn't at home.
Yeah, TV themes. But Hill Street Blues was one like that made the top 10 on the chart.
Oh, yeah.
It was so wild. St. Elsewhere had a great theme song.
Yep.
That was ER before ER.
And I didn't watch that one as much.
Oh, I loved it. That had Howie Mandel.
Young
Denzel Washington. On it. It was a great cast. It had Dr. Mark Craig. Now, that was the dad from the two dads in The Graduate were Dr. Mark Craig and Mayor Larry Vaughn from Jaws.
Yep.
Who wears, without question, the greatest sport coat in history, the Anchor Sport Coat.
Now, you're talking about the mayor from Jaws.
Yes.
The other dad is, his name's William Daniels.
He was Dr. Mark Craig.
Yeah, he's great.
He was terrific.
By the way, the mayor was the villain in Jaws, right? The shark wasn't. The shark was doing what sharks do. The mayor put everybody in harm's way.
But he would. But also, do you want to be on welfare? I mean, I get it. That's the thing. In Jaws, when you're a kid, the second part of it's far and away the best. But when you're an adult, you kind of do understand.
Well, so do you compare that?
My kids were in the pond.
Yeah.
My kids were in the water, too.
The safety versus the economy. Yeah, it is kind of an interesting point. Jaws was the COVID.
So was Mayor Larry Vaughn the true villain? I know this. The man had the greatest sport coat ever. And Emily said, I'll try and find it. You can look online and all, but it's not the same. But if I could ever get that sport coat with the light blue and the white anchors, my wardrobe would be fully completed.
I'll have to go back and look at it or find a photo of it.
I mean, it's just absolutely epic. Love to prove that, wouldn't you? Get your name in the National Geographic.
I love it.
So we need to do for the next one, great TV themes from the 70s and 80s. I know there are a million out there. And also, who was the true villain in certain movies?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Hey, Mayor Vaughn's a good contender there.
Yeah. Maybe there can be more than one.
I saw somebody put something out there a couple of weeks ago. Was Jim Halpert really a jerk for all the jokes he played on Dwight? You could make that case.
Yes, absolutely. And, of course, Todd Packer thought he was something else.
Todd Packer, great American there. The Office, by the way, I think Parks and Rec was the better show, but The Office, that theme song, it's one of the catchiest ones ever. Whoever put that together.
The Steve Carell part of The Office was really good.
Yeah, they should have.
British Office was good, too.
I still hadn't seen it. But The Office should have ended with Jim and Pam or when they got married or just say, all right, we're going to have a victory tour for Steve. But once he left the show, I never watched it again.
Yeah, we watched it, but it was kind of a struggle.
It was like Two and a Half Men when Charlie Sheen left.
Yeah.
Two actors that hit it great for them were Charlie Sheen in Two and a Half Men and Tracy Morgan in 30 Rock. They just got to play themselves.
Yes, exactly.
And got paid millions of dollars to do it.
I would probably rather watch the 2.5 Men Ashton Kutcher version over the Office past Steve Carell.
Ooh, yikes.
What do you think of that?
I've never seen past Steve Carell, so that it had to be bad.
Yeah, it just didn't catch. It was just, yeah.
I got you.
They were struggling to figure out what to do when he left. Yeah.
Yeah, that's rough.
Yep, that's a hot take there for you.
That is a hot take.
He said he'd rather watch Ashton Kutcher 2.5 Men over The Office. That's, no, post-Steve Carell.
Post-Steve Carell Office, yeah, that's right. Now, that's where some shows, like I'll give, Cheers did a great job when Coach Ernie Pantuso passed away. They got in Woody, who was basically a younger version
of Coach. Yep.
I was never a big MASH guy, and it started with, that is the damn most depressing, speaking of TV themes, and the name of the song is Suicide is Painful.
Exactly.
That is the most depressing song, and it's, and we all, you know, it was obviously serious. It's in a war. I was never a big MASH guy, and I thought, too, it was way better with Colonel Blake, with, I like Frank Burns, and I liked Trapper John better than BJ Honeycutt.
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought the first three of those, I thought with three for three were all way better.
Now, have you ever seen the movie?
Once. And that's, who were the two? Is it Elliot Gould and Donald Sutherland?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes, and I think Loretta Swit was in the movie and the... No. No, the Sally girls, Kellerman.
Who was in Back to School.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Sally Kellerman. But there was... somebody was in both. It wasn't Radar, or I have to go back and look, but there was one of them that was in both. But, yeah, Sally Kellerman. Oh!
What you call it when you have no class? And when it comes to great diving teams in history, it's hard to beat the Grand Lakes University Hooters.
That's probably my favorite diving movie.
What a squad that was. Yeah. What a squad.
The great Rodney Dangerfield. Oh. Would you rather watch Back to School or Caddyshack?
Oh, my God.
I'd have to go Caddyshack, but Back to School is just so funny.
It's like I always say, it's like, who's your favorite SI swimsuit much? Like Elle McPherson or Kathy Ireland? Yeah. You can't go wrong with either one. But, yeah, the Grand Lakes University Hooters, undoubtedly one of the great fictional school athletic powerhouses, led by the preferred walk-on, Thornton Mellon, and the triple Lindy. He was a difference maker coming off the bench.
Yeah.
Jump in there. We might need Andrew Rothschild.
I was just thinking the same thing.
We might need Andrew Rothschild.
I was thinking that exact same thing.
Well, I love doing this on the road again. Oh, boy. There's somebody changing a flag.
Oh, man, I hate that.
Well, luckily, this spaceship's got us in good hands.
We'll do another one right when we
go to Tech.
To Tech. Okay, on Tuesday. And we'll do one when we go to Birmingham.
Yeah, and we got a little Glenn Medeiros. Yeah. Nothing's going to change my love for you or something like that. Good old 80s little ballad there. Oh, that's another good. We need to write this down. 80s monster ballads, because I ran into one the other day. I think maybe my favorite, with all due respect to Motley Crue's Home Sweet Home and Poison's Every Rose Has Its Thorn. The Flame by Cheap Trick is a great song.
Oh, man.
I took this baby and did, you do the Harry Potter thing. You put your hands on the screen and then you wiggle it and it turns. It's
like you just did.
Contactless right there. So, and who else could hear Glenn Medeiros today? But DJ, great win for the Dogs here on a Sunday. And
we're in a good mood.
Yep.
Didn't win the series, but won the Sunday game.
And I think two more, we're definitely in. One more, we're on the bubble, baby.
Yep. Yep.
This team's got heart. It's got fight. It's got grit. You know what else? It's got spunk.
I hate spunk. great Lou Grant.
Oh, there's another theme song.
Yep.
We're going to make it. I hated the MASH theme.
Yeah.
That was another great thing about Seinfeld. No serious episodes. So, I mean, all this.
You mean there was never a very special Seinfeld?
A very special. It's like, oh, I get it. I mean, how about a great WKRP in Cincinnati?
Oh, my gosh.
That would also be the top.
Plus Lonnie Anderson and Bailey.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That was kind of a late 70s, early 80s Marianne or Ginger. And you might think it's a no-brainer.
It's not.
But then, hey. No, I know. My man, the big guy, Arthur Carlson.
The big guy. The Maytag repair man. Also ran WKRP.
In Cincinnati. All right, we got to get out of here. thanks for being with us. If you didn't like it, well, just you don't have to listen. If you you did like it, yeah. We'll do this again, going to and from Tech, and hopefully getting another win. Thanks to Mike Bilbo, Alan Thomas, and Tom McDonald. And thanks to our Atlanta area BMW centers. Thanks to Ricky Peacock, and especially my man, Joe Coleman in Athens.
Yeah, man.
I always said I wanted an Aston Martin like 007 had in Goldfinger. This will quite suffice. The MX I6 competition. This thing might even sprout wings or go underwater like the Lotus did in the spine.
Yep. Left
me. Adios, everybody. On the road again. Cue the Willie Nelson.